Well, okay, we're about to kick off an all-new issue of Geek in the City Radio, which comes to you free every single Tuesday. You can watch and stream us at YouTube. Just search up for Geek in the City. Facebook Live, of course, Geek in the City. But our preferred place is check us out over on twitch.tv/Geek in the City. You can watch us live. You can engage in the chat. We try to respond as often as possible when people are live with us in the chat, because that just makes it a lot of fun. If you're not able to catch us live every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time, well, the podcast goes up also free on Wednesdays, sometimes Thursdays, because, you know, life happens at times. As always, this show will always be free to you, the listener. All we ask is that you please share and give us 5-star reviews on any of your podcast aggregate of choice or our Twitch channel, whatever is required. And, of course, please show our sponsors some love. They're the ones that keep us going. They have believed in us in a long time, just like you have. So, with all of that out of the way, here we go. We're going to kick off an all-new issue of Geek in the City Radio. Hello, and welcome to issue 731 of Geek in the City Radio. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Duran.
And I'm your other host, Bean Arita.
And I am your other host.
What's Cable shaking, Hush bacons?
I don't get to introduce myself now.
I thought I had timed it. I was trying to...
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, like, how much sugar have you had that you're not even going to let Cable finish?
None. I was trying to hit the post on your...
Oh, okay. That's fine. Yeah.
All right, that was it. That's it. That's it. Good night, everybody. That's Thanks it. For joining
that's,
us.
That's the show.
Bye. Well, like, well, how is everyone doing?
Pretty good.
What's up?
It's a good Tuesday for a change.
It's a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No strong feelings about it.
It's my Monday.
Cool.
It's tight. Usually my Wednesday. So.
How about this? How was y'all's weekend?
Good. I got an extra hole stuck in my face.
Me too.
Hey.
Well, I didn't. I missed the memo. I didn't get any holes stuck in my face.
So I lost my fake septum piercing a couple months ago, or I'm not even sure. I lost it, and I've been wanting. I was like, well, clearly I liked it because I had it for like 3 years, I think.
Yeah, you did.
So I was like, I should just go ahead and do it for reals now. But I got to find a place because I haven't actually had any work done in Portland. Oh, no, that's not true. I've had one tattoo done in Portland. Mm-hmm.
But no piercings.
Yeah. And so, like, I would randomly remember to, like, try to Google places. And I just wasn't really, nothing really stood out. Mm-hmm. And then last week I happened to have a conversation with my acupuncturist, and she's like, I ended up asking her where she gets her work done, and she said Ritual Arts, because she has a friend there, and that's where she gets all her work done. And the next day I looked them up, and I realized I could get an appointment for that weekend. So that was Friday for Saturday. I was like, fuck it, let's do it.
And then
I told you.
Yeah, and you know, I've been wanting one for years, and I always just chicken out. And then when you were like, I'm doing it on Saturday, I was like, I should do it too. But not on Saturday, but yeah, the same place. Who give a discount to BIPOC people, I guess. I found that out when I was there.
That's well, really that's cool. Nice.
Yeah. I didn't know that either.
I mean, you had told me, and I remember when we were ringing up, I was like, do I say something? We're just, but he just saw my name and went, I'm giving you the discount.
Yeah, they just clock you, but like, but in a good way.
The best kind of profiling, I guess. The one that saves money.
No, everyone there is like really chill and friendly. And I ended up leaving a Google review for them. And what I said was like, I've had, you know, like tattoos and piercings done in multiple cities across several states. Mm-hmm. But this is like by far the best experience I've ever had with people stabbing me. So that's not how I worded it, but now I kind of want to go back and say so.
I am amused. Put
it
that way.
I think they'd like it, actually.
I'm amused that you received this this tip of where to go to get pierced from your acupuncturist. that's the funniest part to me.
The funniest part to me is that I have an acupuncturist.
Why is that funny?
Just because I really did not believe in acupuncture being a legitimate way to treat things.
Were you just silently mocking me then when I would talk about my acupuncture experience?
No, I don't like judge anyone who does it, or I didn't. Shut up.
I didn't say anything.
I see you. You're on camera and you're right in front of me. No. I mean, like, if you feel like it does something for you, then that's great. And, you know, I was all, like, messed up in the body a couple years ago, and they threw everything at me. I was going to physical therapy, chiropractor, which I also was like, but they're all great. It's all amazing, and it does work, and I feel much better now. I went from having, like, constant pain almost every day, or pretty much every day, to usually no pain. So that's good. My body works better. Yep. My feet, my heels touch the ground when I sit in a chair now. Mm-hmm. I always thought it was just my shortness, but it turns out, like, I've spent, like, I don't know, decades with, like, hamstrings that don't work all the way.
That's what I'm getting worked on my massage therapist. He touched around the hamstring area and then kind of like the upper thigh area. And I visibly went, ugh!
Oh, yeah. When
like it was instant.
When they sent me for a massage with like an LMT, I could barely stand to be touched on my legs, my glutes. It was literally painful just for her to put her hands on me.
Yeah, it's a new thing for me. He's like, and he was like, he's like, this isn't what we're going to focus on. He's like, it's going to hurt a lot the first few times. He's like, and recovery's going to hurt. I'm like, okay. I tried acupuncture 3 times. Gave me a migraine every time. Apparently that's very rare, but it can happen. I was like, oh, I guess I'm, yay me. What a fun gift.
Much like therapy, I think it also depends on the acupuncturist, the massage therapist, the chiropractor that you work with.
Yeah,
there are some massage therapists that I work with that don't quite get in there. And then there are others that I work with. I'm like, oh yes, you understand to use a jackhammer on all of my parts.
Yeah,
thank you.
The guy, he's super nice. His name's Matt. He's really great. He doesn't like jackhammer it, but he finds like under pressure points, and he'll be like, I'll be on my back, and he'll be like, I don't know, whatever the muscle is here. And he's like, I want you to move your head to the right, take a deep breath. And all of a sudden off, he's like, there it is. Like it's under another muscle. He's like, there it is. Now exhale. And I'm like, wow.
Is it this area in here?
It's right here.
Oh, that. Yeah. That one's real fun.
Yeah. But he's really great. And he's also, this sounds kind of weird, he's very tender and supportive. Mm-hmm. He's always like, you're doing a great job. Yeah, that's the deep breath. And it, like, I'm sounding creepy and I don't mean to, but like, I feel very safe around him. Same with the guy who did my piercing. Like, he like cradled my head when I started to tear up a little bit. He's like, you're doing great. Just keep breathing. Aww. You're doing great. And I'm like, okay. Cause I'm a big baby.
Yes, right around the clavicles, Norm.
Yeah.
But below.
Yeah.
I hated my massage therapist. I feel like she was not really willing to, like, work her way up to the necessary amount of pressure, despite how much discomfort I was in. And she was just, like, very gruff and not personable at all. But she did help fix me. So that's what matters, I guess, in the long term.
I think it's because that I've had enough done, enough body work done, that when I am working with new people, I can go, hi, I enjoy this amount of pressure. I can withstand this. I can withstand this. I generally, when I'm trying to give them guidelines of like, this is how much pressure you can use before I go, okay, that's too much, I will say, it's like, I am comfortable having people manipulate my psoas. And they're like, oh, okay.
What's that part again?
The psoas muscle is behind your stomach. It connects your upper torso to your legs.
Yeah. He worked on that too.
Yeah. It is incredibly painful to have worked on.
Well, yeah. You only need work done on it if you've messed it up.
Yep.
like that weird little triangle bone that's by your tailbone that just kind of floats there.
Mm-hmm.
That's like controlled by other muscles. He's like, yeah. He's like, that's the pain right there.
Mm.
And that's like the hamstring working on. This was also the first massage therapist that I feel like listened to me.
Mm-hmm.
When I was like, no, this is where the pain is. This is what I want to work on. Well, we're going to start here. But why?
I'm not comfortable with someone just like all over my body. But I feel like, you know, because now I'm working on memory. Like I just don't feel like she was receptive to any amount of feedback. Like if I was being timid about my feedback, okay, yeah, that's on me, I suppose. But also, shouldn't you be like picking up on my signals if I'm like constantly going?
You should.
That's not me having a good time.
Yep.
I could have like asked for the VA to like re-up my referrals for massage, and I chose not to. I was like, you know what? I can find someone else and I'll just spend my own money, which I haven't done that either. But meanwhile, I have been seeing the acupuncturist for a year and a half, I think, maybe 2 years. And we just keep requesting them to refill my referral or however you would describe that. Because I really, really like her.
Yeah. I keep getting worried that eventually I'm going to get a letter from Kaiser saying, oh, you went through all your therapy and massage therapy months ago, buddy.
Oof.
You won't.
I guess not. I'm just used to one saying, like, every insurance I've ever had, they're like, you get 6 a year. I'm like, good, I can be fixed in 6 sessions.
Yep. I see a chiropractor, massage therapist, and acupuncturist monthly.
I do it bi-weekly right now.
Yeah. I do it once a month so that I don't have to get an intense three. Like,
you're in maintenance mode now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I'm in repair.
And I work on keeping that maintenance going. Otherwise, I would just break down.
But what you're saying is Kaiser allows for that, like to just continuous.
Well, not that this is an ad for Kaiser.
No. At least my Kaiser plan does.
Yes.
If we're advertising for anybody today besides our guest, it's Ritual Arts Tattoo and Piercing Studio.
That's true. Yeah, they were really good. They were super cool.
No, fuck insurance. But that's cool that they let you, that they allot for maintenance level services like that. Preventative care.
Yep.
It's a real thing that we should all have.
Yep.
Can I double check you with my guest?
That I wasn't questioning what you were doing. That was your weekend. That sounds great.
Oh, right.
what else? Whose weekend was that? We
both
started
of ours.
With you.
Well, I mean, it was both of yours. Cause you got pierced and then you got pierced.
Yeah.
I went to an estate sale.
Ooh.
With Denise.
It was an estate marketplace.
That's true. It's an estate marketplace. They're a company that takes in a bunch of like different estates, and they have a once a month marketplace.
Ryan's uncle used to do that.
Huh.
Yep. So I have fond memories of being as a kid on his giant auction lot.
Yep.
Yeah, just different estates and stuff. He let us drive anything that still drove. He had like an acre junkyard.
That's...
So just imagine 13-year-old Ryan and I. Woo!
Yeah, that sounds like it was a dangerous idea. Yeah, fun, but dangerous.
It's great.
So that was fun. And then Merrick and I went to the Portland Baroque Opera, or Orchestra. Portland Baroque Orchestra. They did they had a performance at the First Baptist Church in downtown Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Which is an amazing concert venue.
Yes. Yes, it is. I love that place.
It has two walls that, like, raise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's incredible. A friend of mine works for the Portland Baroque Orchestra.
Oh, cool.
And she offered us some passes. So we're like, sure.
Is it because you were out of Monet?
No. Was Monet part of the Baroque period?
No, but you don't need to go to Baroque when you have Monet.
Okay. I see. That's as good as the clocks joke in Beauty and the Beast of, if it's not broke, don't
fix it. yeah.
But yes, it was a wonderful performance. If you are in Portland and have an opportunity to check out the Portland Baroque Orchestra and you enjoy Baroque music or classical music in general, I highly recommend doing so.
Cool.
Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah. I'm trying to get out more, so it'll be cool to check that stuff out.
Yep. They just finished their 2023-2024 season and are now taking memberships and ticket sales for their 2024 and 2025 season.
Nice. Fantastic.
Yee.
I'm sorry. I am corresponding.
I know. I think that was it. I need to catch up on, like, Star Trek and shit.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm having fun with this season of Discovery.
I'm only one episode in.
Me too. Did you miss the memo about it being two episodes the first release?
Not really. We just haven't had the time.
Mm.
We've been doing other things, and yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think you'll both enjoy it.
I'm still floored by the fact that the whole MacGuffin for this season is based on a TNG episode.
And a bad one.
That was not good.
Yeah.
Like, really? This is the one you're going for?
Yeah. This is the hill you're going to die on, huh?
Uh-huh. Okay.
Oh, well, my God. What made it not good in TNG?
The writing, the pig. Was it a season 6 or 7 episode?
It was a season 6.
Okay.
I think.
It was just... It's an idea. What's funny is that, like, this entire arc of Discovery is so, like, the shit that Roddenberry would have loved.
Great.
Because he was bid on the whole, like, what if there was one progenitor thing of, like, DNA that seeded the entire galaxy, and that's how we're all blah, 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 blah. That's this one. That's the TNG episode where they're all, like, the Klingons, the Romulans, and whatever.
The Cardassians. The Ferengi.
Yeah, they're all going on, basically, like, Cannonball Run in space. But for, like, this all-powerful weapon. Well, literally...
They think.
Literally, the weapon is the friends you made along the way. Like, yep. They're all, like, you know, because it was human perfectionism that still drove a lot of TNG, you know, Picard's like, I think it's great that we're all connected. And the Ferengi are like, gross. The Cardassians are all, fuck that. You know, and the Romulans are like, no. And the Klingons are all like, ptah. They're all pissed that we could be even moderately related on the grand galactic scale. And then but the one progenitor's like, and when you are ready, you will find the true key, whatever. Well, it's 32nd century. I guess we're fucking ready.
Nope.
But I know. No, there is a thing. It's not a spoiler at all. But in the second episode, like, they reference the mission that Picard went on. That yeah. Enterprise D crew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really quick. They're like, oh, yeah, this is. I heard about Picard doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think she literally says, oh, yeah, Picard went after this thing. I know this.
That's what David Cronenberg tells her in episode one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. No,
he goes, I'm going to read you in on this. This is what this is. This is what we're chasing.
But I saw, like, so many complaints on various Trek sites, like, through social media of, like, it's so stupid. I mean, Discovery took place 10 years before TOS, and now they're in the future. How would Michael know? And everyone's like, fucking history.
Yeah, they've been in the future for a while now.
Computers.
And they have access to all of the world's information.
Only one show was wholly egregious about not acknowledging its past, and it was TNG.
Yeah.
With Naked Now?
Oh, yeah.
When they're like, I've heard Psi 2000. I've heard... Computer, bring up Psi 2000. And it's like, under the command of James T. Kirk, USS Enterprise. Riker literally goes, I've heard of that name somewhere. Kirk. I'm like, mother... Even at like 12 when it came out, I was like, seriously?
And any argument that anyone is going to have that says, Michael wouldn't know these things, it's like, you do realize that Picard historically hung out with both her foster father and foster brother.
Yes.
He mind-melded with Sarek.
Right. And Spock. But again, like, also,
when she looked up Spock's history to find out what happened to him and saw all the things,
who's this white bald motherfucker in my brother's memories?
Yep. Like, he's linked.
Yeah. Who's this Jean-Luc Picard?
Yep. If we want to take that further, the whole Kelvin timeline came out of work that Picard, Spock, Geordi, and Data, or not Data, but Geordi, yeah. Geordi, Spock, and Picard were all working together to save Romulus.
Right. Yeah. That's the other thing that people, because I guess, because Paramount did announce the fourth movie.
Oh, did they?
They flat out announced it. It's got a pretty good lineup of who's going to work on it. Gosh dang it. I just had it. So apparently it's going to be Kelvin. Yeah, so it's going to be directed by Toby Haynes, who's doing the Section 31 spinoff. But it's the writers behind the Lego Batman movie. So it's got, like, decent writers and director on it. And apparently it's going to be a prequel. Here's what's throwing me. It's going to be a prequel to the 2009 one. They talk about it being the forming of the Federation. I'm like, well, that's fucking Enterprise. Because Enterprise still has... Enterprise is such a dork. Enterprise is unaffected by the Kelvin timeline.
Yeah.
Because don't get me wrong, I would love to watch a Forming of the Federation movie. I don't know how well it would do, because that's some wanky shit, but...
Yes, it is. That's odd.
Yeah. Or give me the movie with Balthazar.
Hold on a second.
Yes.
Enterprise. Star Trek Enterprise is unaffected by the Kelvin timeline.
Correct.
But that posits that we are talking about one timeline that then splits into... OG versus Kelvin.
Well,
universes.
Correct, but it doesn't go back.
Yeah. The timeline is here.
Well, how?
Enterprise is here. So.
Right, right. Like it's a fork in the road.
Right. At yeah. Kelvin.
But it doesn't have to be. It could just be two different instances of this universe in which the Federation exists.
It's time travel. It's best you don't think a lot about it. But I do love these nerdy kind of like brain things.
Is it two different timelines?
Yes.
Or can it just be two different? Could it be a multiverse thing?
It could be, except that branch that they're from,
right?
Still, they share the same branch right up until the destruction of Kelvin.
Right, which is roughly, let's say even 20 years before the 2009 movie, because let's say that Kirk enters the Academy at 20.
I think it was 25.
Yeah, let's just say. So yeah, there's a 20-year time period. If they want to do a prequel to 2009 movie, they can do. If they want it to be purely Kelvin. But if they want it to be, right?
Yeah, but the Federation still exists before then.
That's what I mean. They talk about it probably being about the formation of the Federation, which puts it way before, like 50 years before the USS Kelvin's destroyed. At least. Because Enterprise is what, 100 years before TOS? 150. Roughly? Yeah. You know, Or they'll be like, fuck it, we're just giving you the Earth-Romulan War.
I'd take that too.
Sure. Because that's the other thing. As much as I love, like I feel like Trek works best on TV because of the stories it tells. If it's going to be a cinematic experience, it kind of has to be pew, pew. It could have a message, but it kind of needs pew, pew. It needs to be a blockbuster for it to justify a cinematic appearance.
I would still rather have the... If they're doing one more Kelvin timeline movie, I would rather them move forward than back.
I would too.
Because I just want more Chris Pine. I'm going to watch the fucking Pool Man because...
That movie does look kind of a trip.
Oh, man. I saw a trailer. Have you seen a trailer for this?
No, this is the first time hearing of it.
It is Chris Pine's directorial debut.
Oh. Oh, mm-hmm. I listened to an interview where they mentioned this.
Yeah, and
but now I can't remember what
he stars in it, and it's he's directing it, and the cast is just like, did you just phone up the 18 people that you know that are famous and go, hey, you want to be in this movie with me? And they all went, yes.
That's exactly what they did.
It looks like, it also has that feel and look of a movie that went, you filmed this during the strike because you had backers that went, oh no, we meet your demands. Here you go.
Well, yeah,
because it was a strike proof movie.
Yeah, because both guilds were like, if you were doing an independent film outside the studio system, you are more than welcome to.
Yeah.
That's why A24 cranked out, like began like three productions during the strike.
Yeah, because now is when we are going to see, we're going to reap the benefits of the movies that were filmed. Like, when was Love Lies Bleeding filmed? I feel like that was a strike movie.
Yeah, I feel like O'Brien, she rolled right into that right after Andor, I bet.
Probably.
Yeah.
Or Ant-Man.
By the way, that's a hard movie to watch, Love Lies Bleeding.
You've already seen
I'll bet.
I have. If you have a thing, if you have a visceral reaction to non-jokey depictions of throwing up on screen, do not watch Love Lies Bleeding unless you prepare yourself. There's a lot of
okay. Maybe I'll
there's
wait,
a lot.
Maybe I'll wait for that one to be on
because of what they put their bodies through. It's a lot.
No thanks.
With that,
yes. So tonight, friend of the show, Reverend Nat West is an erstwhile cider evangelist, an ally and activist, and currently a bus driver for Portland Metro. But today he's joining us to talk about his 2024 run for Portland City Council. Welcome back to the show, Nat.
Let's see.
Can you unmute him?
I have asked to unmute. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I got you.
There we go.
Good. Everything broke on my computer. I had to start over again.
That's all right.
But I'm on the shitty mic because my nice mic wasn't working.
I mean, that's kind of what we always had you on when you weren't in the studio.
Well, I had this nice thing, this thing right here.
I think I still have one of those in my supplies. If you need another, if you need to replace yours,
no, I think I have to like reboot my computer or something, which I'm not gonna do.
Yeah. So how's it going? I know we don't have you a whole lot of time because you're also, the bus driver, and then you got an early start tomorrow.
I was just at another event. It's super. Are we recording?
Yes.
Yes.
So.
A gala.
Ooh.
Which some of you guys knew me well enough about how well I would do in a gala. So
I wore this flannel. You wore your new flannel.
I wore my nice jeans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And my new flannel, and of course I was glad. I was like, "Oh yeah, I have to go to another event. Sorry, bye." I have to go to another event.
already becoming a big way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so now I'm like eating dinner because there's no time to eat dinner.
That's fine.
This is the glamorous side of politics that they right. don't tell you about.
Yeah. Well, when you can't have Phil Knight cut you a check for $100K. You got to go out and work at it.
Yeah.
Even though you breach ethics by calling somebody guilty on your elections form. What? There's only one good. There's only one Vasquez, and she died on LV 426.
Wow.
That's right. I said it. Wow. I said what I said.
Nat, I wanted to say thank you for coming out and seeing us at that podcast roundtable that TPK hosted last week.
Yeah.
It was nice to have you have a familiar face in the crowd.
It was cool. It was really cool. I'm glad Aaron invited me because it was cool. I got there as soon as I could after my bus route.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I feel like we all kind of know what you're doing, but for the folks that maybe are just kind of tuning in or only kind of casually listening to the podcast, we all know like the cidery is no more. It's the next stage of your life. And your next stage, A, is driving for TriMet, which is cool. Mm-hmm. We definitely need more drivers for that. But you are running in District 2 because Portland is completely, finally restructuring its system of government after 100 years.
Yeah. Climate's super cool. It's like the opposite of Reverend Nets, and simultaneously, I think it's a little bit closer to actually being a city council person because you're out there doing things and seeing things and helping people. But yeah, really just wild changes all together. I like change.
That we know.
That could be that could be your slogan.
That's right.
I like change.
I like change. So what, I mean, I feel like we've heard the story before, depending on different events, but like what made you decide to get into politics in general? It's not to say you were never passionate about causes, but this is like a jump in a way.
Yeah, I think it just comes from that passion about causes and thinking. Okay, so Reverend Nats closed in September, or I'm not using the word closed, I'm saying finished.
Right.
It was a wonderful thing that we made, and we created a thing, and then it's finished.
I mean, you kind of set out to change how Americans viewed cider, and you did. Like,
right. Remember that George Bush like mission accomplished banner on a aircraft carrier?
Right, but that's. But yours exactly. actually worked.
Yes.
It's my favorite meme, I guess.
Is it?
Yeah. It's not really a meme. It's just a photograph.
Yes.
Of a thing that really happened.
Yep.
Well, you don't have to meme it when it's that bad.
Yep.
Yep.
Like they say, all good things come to an end. So.
That's right. Yeah. And I mean, Aaron, you and Denise, you were there too at the end, our last night, right?
Mm-hmm.
We told this story about. I felt like Reverend Nats was a really good book, and the book finished. And when you a good book, when you get to the end, it's over, and you're like all the things are wrapped up, and it's you're reflective about what happened, and you were along for the ride the whole time, and then it's like done. And sometimes there's a second book in a trilogy or whatever, but. That's not, I'm not going to open a cider company. But it definitely felt like we did a thing and the thing was over.
I mean, that was your third location, so it was kind of a trilogy.
Oh, ooh.
See?
Yeah.
You can take
the
that
trilogy
one.
Was over. And I had been, we all have good days and bad days, and all my bad days or my bad weeks or whatever, I would come home from work and I would just say, I just want to be a bus driver. Like, to me, it was always like the grass is always greener kind of thing. Like I just want to do something that's kind of brainless, but still kind of interesting. Doesn't really require any responsibility. I mean, I don't shy away from responsibility, but like a different kind of responsibility. And,
right.
Still pretty active, but sort of be a cog in a machine rather than, driving the bus. So I told my kid via text, I'm closing the Reverend Nats. And they were like, so you can be a bus driver now? That's like the first thing I said. So I was like, shit, I guess I should be a bus driver now. So I kind of just did it just for kicks. And they let me in. And so now I drive a bus, which is exactly what I thought it would be, the opposite of Riverdale.
Well, I mean, and so sometimes you'll write these really nice long form posts on your social media about people you see on the bus. And you're never like specific about who they are or anything, but that's a... It's a really nice view into the city that I don't think gets talked about a whole lot.
Yeah, being a bus driver, like you're overlooked all the time because even if your bus is late and you're pissed off, the last time you got on a bus and it was late and you were pissed off, can you remember who the driver was?
I mean, kind of, but I tend to only have the same three on my route.
The drivers just vanish into the background.
Sure.
Even though you may have some sort of momentary animosity or praise or whatever, we're all kind of interchangeable. And I really like that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I've been like telling these stories or seeing these stories happen in front of me where as a driver, I have a front row seat, the front row seat, to so many things happening in the city. With people in the built environment, relationships. And I'm sort of like, a guy on Instagram was like, oh yeah, I worked at a front desk of a hotel for 23 years. And let me tell you, I got this story. So those are the kind of things where it's like, people just take you for granted. And I really like that. I like being just helping people through their day and getting no feedback. I mean, they all say thanks or whatever, but they probably say thanks whether I was a good driver or a bad driver or whatever. They don't know who they're saying thanks to. It's just kind of the rule of what you do in Portland. Mm-hmm. So I really like the service aspect of it and just like being taken for granted or like part of the fabric of their day.
Mm-hmm.
Just and it enables them to go do those awesome things, whatever they're doing. And that's actually one of my favorite things about River Nats was always like finding cool people and like helping them tell their story, helping them elevate their game, helping them figure out, you know, if they have a cool idea. I'm like, I guess I got tired of cider actually a bunch of years ago, and I started to just really get excited about other people's stuff and using my resources to help other people. And this is a very different version of that, but it's kind of scratching the same itch.
Right.
And I think that's kind of why I'm interested in city council as well.
I'm going to say, yeah, is it like this need for like service or whatever is what kind of drew you into? Because for folks who don't know, Portland has had a council system with a mayor that serves on the council and is over city departments on their own. For like 100 years, we are the only major city that still runs our government that way.
Mm-hmm.
That has led to a very unfair system within our city. A very wealthy white system in our city. Someone can correct me, but I feel like not only was Joanne Hardesty the first black woman elected to the council, I think she was the the second person who lived east of 39th slash shot. Yeah, second.
Yep. And outs, and even worse, there are only a handful who ever lived east of the river.
Right.
And relatively modern. So it's the history. Yeah, okay. Oh, we're all good because Chloe Udaly and Joanne Hardesty got elected. No, it's like the history is still decades and decades and decades of really messed up system here in Portland. So yeah, the whole new government is changing. Mm-hmm. There's we're electing 12 councilors where there used to be 4 plus a mayor. Now there's going to be 12. All of the previous councilors, commissioners, including the mayor, were elected citywide. There was no geographic districts.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to pretend like you had to go to like, you know, fundraising thing in the West Hills and talk about how much you hate poor people. And then you have to go, well, they never went east of 82nd.
No.
Kidding. But they would go to like Alameda and say, yeah, we hate poor people a little bit less. So you had to like pretend like you understood so many different parts of the city. And the city is, it's big. There's a lot of differences between people who live on the border of Clackamas and downtown, or St. John's, or right off MLK. And so I think the current system is set up for failure. I don't see, it cannot be just a bad elected officials. The fact that we've had so many bad commissioners in history, in recent history especially. The system is really, the system creates just nothing but opportunities for failure and for you not to do your best
and,
work. So.
And for exploitation, making making our public works, that meaning like our Bureau of Transportation, our fire, our water, making them pseudo political pawns also has screwed us over completely because now it's what's more important, parking places or biking? Well, it all depends on whoever's cutting the most money to maps right now. Right. Like that's what's most important. And this new system is going to do away with that.
It's a very simple calculation that you could do in the old system, the current system. If let's say that you are looking at a piece of land across the street from a fire station and you want to tear down a derelict building, and just be a little bit nice about it, and you want to abandoned building, and you want to put up an apartment tower there, and you know that having a fire station across the street won't be as good for your rent because we're all night long, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can say, I'm going to make a ton of money if I can get this thing built and get a fire station moved. Now, I'm not saying this has ever happened, but this is the possibility, right?
Right.
So, okay, I'm gonna give $10 million to, I'm talking about real, that's a real number that is thrown around in local politics. I'm going to give $10 million to this person's campaign. They're going to get elected. And then when they're elected, I'm going to go to the mayor and be like, hey, can you make sure that this person's in charge of fire? Okay. Because you donated my campaign too.
Right.
Yeah, this person is now in charge of fire bureau, and you're going to be like, hey, you got to move that fire station. And okay, yes, sir. I want to get reelected. And that's the kind of thing that is just complete par for the course. That's how the city has been run for decades and decades. Not exclusively run, but that is the level, that's the way to get things done in the city board model. And the new model, new councilors are not in charge of bureaus at all. There is a city administrator who's in charge of the bureaus, who's in charge of people who are in charge of the bureaus, who's in charge of people who are in charge of people who are in charge of the bureaus. And so it's like, it really separates the executive branch from the legislative branch.
Right.
And that, I mean, it's like, that's what you learn in social studies when you're in fifth grade, but that's not what we have in the city of Portland. We have legislators who are also running the executive branches of the bureaus,
right,
which just creates corruption. So the new system doesn't, there's no, no overlap of the executive and legislative branch.
Right. And if I'm correct, I think the new mayor system, they will have, they can tie break votes, but they don't have veto power, do they?
No veto.
Because I know there was a certain person running for mayor who really wanted that, and it got shot down.
Yep, yep. So we passed a charter reform bill in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
Every 10 years, the city of Portland creates a charter review commission. And I don't know how you get on the commission, honestly. I'm sure it's public knowledge. But and the charter review commission looks at the charter. And the charter is our constitution, how we run our, how we organize our government and the way we do things. But from a pretty high level, you're not getting into the weeds too far. You could get in the weeds, but you don't have to. And we passed this whole hog change of government in 2022. And the powers that be were like, wait a minute, this means we're going to have, it's less easy for us to buy counselors. When we do buy counselors, they're going to have less direct control over things.
Mm-hmm.
But we can probably still buy ourselves a mayor. So let's just make sure the mayor has a ton of power. So they tried to, after we passed this whole change of government, the money people came in and said, yeah, let's try to change it again to get the mayor veto power. They passed some rules that really guts the staff of the legislative body, the counselors. So I don't really care about that, because once we're in charge, we're just going to give ourselves more staff. It's a temporary problem. Right. They're trying to like really concentrate the power in the mayor's office. So we'll see how that goes, but there's going to be 12 of us and one mayor.
Yeah. So each district, there's four districts now, and each one's going to have three council people.
Right. Three equal council people. Mm-hmm. And all three seats open up at the same time whenever there's a re-election. So there's not like, you have to be a little bit collaborative, because your ballot will let you pick up to six people, but only the top three vote winners get in.
Right, because we also instituted ranked choice voting for Portland. Right.
So this year will be the first time that we're using. Yeah,
and
that.
I know there's a group trying to push it statewide also.
Yeah, ranked choice is extremely common in South America and Latin America in general.
A couple European countries do it.
A couple of European countries, and then Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Yeah, I think New Zealand does too. But who? Yeah, I don't know.
Well, I think there's a twist that we have as well. It's multi-member districts. So I think you do ranked choice voting in New York.
Yeah.
For the New York City Council. They have single-member districts.
It prevents like what we had with our mayor this time, in that he got re-elected with like 32% of the vote.
Yeah, less than 50% of the vote. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's pretty cool. There's been three people elected per district, and you get to vote for up to six. So it's really in everybody's best interest to fill out all six. You're essentially throwing away a portion of your vote if you don't fill in all six bubbles. And in every district, there's way more than six candidates running. So you essentially get to decide, you know, what are your six favorite candidates in order.
I think your
first place vote carries more weight than your sixth place vote.
I think you said that the district you're running in has the most, District 2.
Yeah, currently we have like 21. There's somebody that's gonna announce tomorrow. It's gonna be, I think, 21 or 22. I expect it might get up to like 30 in District
And
2.
it's Portland. How many of them are going to be real, like actually serious?
Exactly.
Like, how many of them are like, "I'm Stuffy's the clown"?
Yeah, I think there's probably most people I've talked to think there's probably going to be five or six legitimate candidates who raise money and get out and do work and, you know, send little pieces of mail and pieces of paper in the mail and, you know, people who think there's a legitimate option. And we're already seeing that right now. Like in our district, there's a big drop off between the fifth place person by dollars and the sixth place person. And then there's very little difference between the seventh and the 21st place person.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I
Yeah.
know
It's
that
just a matter
like,
of like, are you going to do the work? And it's a ton of work to be.
and I know like in my district, I think the two biggest, air quotes biggest, is probably Angelina Murillo and Robin Yee are the two.
That's right.
And they're also the two that have my attention the most. So, you
Yeah,
know.
it's there's a really fascinating collaborative thing happening because of this ranked choice voting. So you really don't want to badmouth other candidates, except I'm gonna start badmouthing Dan Ryan in a minute because he's in my district.
That's look,
Because you
anyone I
don't.
feel like is on the council now is fair game.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're the incumbent, so
I
you
mean,
can
everyone
fight.
knows how much I love Renee Gonzalez. Just what a peach of a human.
Wonderful guy. So, like, you don't want to, like, let's say that somebody's first place choice was Dan Ryan, and I was their second place choice, and I come out shitting on Dan Ryan, and then they're like, "Oh, well, I like Dan Ryan so much, I'm not going to give Nat my second place vote." The second place vote is carrying a lot of weight. So, what we're finding already in the race is that candidates are being really collaborative. You know, at worst, we're just like not talking shit about other people except Dan Ryan. But like today, I had a lunch meeting with Angelina Murillo. So, learning how to collaborate across districts as well is
Yeah, I
a
was curious about that.
topic of
Yeah.
conversation. Yeah, because, you know, Angelina is the number one dollar candidate citywide and the far and away the number one number of donation, you know,
Yeah.
donors
She's super,
citywide.
super media savvy too. And her
Yeah,
ideas are great.
$27
I've been
million dollars,
following all of her.
TikTok.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she has all like the, it makes sense why she's getting the traction she's getting. And then when you listen to her words, you're like, oh, we're not going to elect a person who's been on TikTok and has no brain. She's actually like, she worked for Joanne Hardisty in her office for a couple of years, and she's currently a policy analyst on a state level. So she knows stuff about politics that I have no idea what she's talking about when she talks about political stuff. So super cool person. And so when she, we're already thinking, I'm the number one donor in District 2, so we're having a little chit chat like when we get elected rather than if we get elected. So we're already thinking about what we're going to do in November and December and January before we're seated. And that kind of collaboration is just wild in a political
Right.
sphere to be able to have that kind of early collaboration as well.
Yeah.
Pretty significant collaboration.
I know you're on a bit of a time crunch, but like, what would be like your, I mean, yeah, we'll put you on the spot a little bit. Like, what are your like top five things like day one that you feel should be addressed within your district? And then like, let's just say like ad hoc citywide at the same time.
Yeah, there's things that I think that should be addressed that I'm not going to address because I'm not the expert on them. I know which way I have strong line in the sand positions on certain topics that I'm not an expert on. So I'll put a pin in those. We can come back to those if we want to. But the things that I'm bringing to, that I will bring to council that are, I will probably most likely be, you know, the subject matter expert on council about. I mean, there's staff people who are going to know way more about these topics than me, but I have a lot of passion and experience, and I'm willing to do the work on these topics. Is primarily around business development. So there is a, like most issues, there's a lot of things wrapped together, and when you start working on one issue. It has domino effects in other areas, or it has, you know, butterfly wing flaps type effects elsewhere. So, A big thing that I will work on, and I'm already starting to work on it with business development folks, is permitting and a design review and zoning. So I spent a little over three years at Reverend Nat's negotiating a building permit for one of my three locations. And during that time, I had to mediate a disagreement between Portland Water Bureau and Bureau of Environmental Services. So the Water Bureau is the people who make sure that your sewers are built according to code, mm-hmm. and they're not going to like flush poop back up into your house and stuff like that. And BES, Bureau of Environmental Services, is primarily charged with business, industrial, commercial sewer, what goes through the pipe to make sure that it's cleanish, or they can manage it downstream. Mm-hmm. So they make most food manufacturers have to submit to a testing protocol to make sure that their sewer effluent isn't too acidic or too basic or whatever. And BES wanted me to do the sewer this one way, and Portland Water Bureau said, you got to do it a different way. And I was like, hold on, not my job. And they were like, yeah, but we don't care. Because at the time, PBOT and BES were overseen by two different commissioners. Mm-hmm. And there was no central boss. There was no person to mediate them. I tried for a long time, and my architect, a lot of money, right, went into pointing out their idiocy and trying to offer a good solution that I thought would work between the two of them. They could never agree. And I'm just a guy making cider. I'm not like producing nuclear waste or whatever, right?
Right. Right.
So I finally got the city ombudsman involved, and she was kind of helpful. I had to call Earl Blumenau, who used to be on city council like 45 years ago.
Right.
To be like, hey, dude, I know this is like not your game at all, but what do I do? And he kind of helped me navigate his office helped me kind of navigate what I should do. And eventually I got it resolved, and eventually we opened. But I'm not alone. If you talk to any other business person in Portland about the terribleness of the permitting situation, it's atrocious. Carmen Rubio picked off some work recently to bring all permitting under a single bureau. So you don't have to go get a water permit and a BES permit and a PBOT permit. It's all going to be one central permitting office. Which is great. That is the, first drop in the bucket. Now, it's an incredible drop. Nobody has been able to do that work that she was able to do. Like previous commissioners decades ago been trying to do this, and she managed to get it, so props to her. But it really, to me, it opens the floodgates for us to do a bigger permit reform, mm-hmm. So we can get permits through the system faster. And that, along with zoning and along with design review, improvements in design review, will mean that we can create more buildings. Now, that might just sound like rich people getting richer, but what it means is we'll create more apartments, we'll create more townhomes, we'll create more housing, which means everybody's rent goes down. It's simple supply and demand. There's nothing magical about it. The more empty units you have, the lower the price gets. So, and then attached to development is another big thing for me is climate stuff, right? And I'm all about transit-oriented development. So when you build a apartment, where's the nearest bus stop? Where's the nearest bus line? How many bus lines does it serve? Do we have an opportunity to create a huge apartment development? Like, maybe if you remember what happened in the Lloyd District like 20 years ago, where they threw up like seven towers all in one area near mm-hmm. the mall. Mm-hmm. They did it because the MAX line was right there and the streetcar was right there. So it's making sure that we're building dense housing in a way, in partnership is such a political word, but in partnership with TriMet, so that they can make sure that they're providing, they know that you're gonna have 10,000 people in this 4-block right. radius coming, and it's all like a bigger plan down the road so that we can not have to do cars all the time.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Right.
Because people have forgotten how to drive them.
Things. You know, I drive my bus around with like four people. If I have, I think the number is three people in my bus, I am emitting less carbon than three cars.
Wow, really?
Yeah, so an environmental lawyer guy told me the number. I think it's 3. The national average for bus is 10 riders per hour. So the average bus is, you know, roughly 3 times more carbon friendly, than climate friendly than
right
passenger vehicle.
And I feel like, I think we've talked about this a little bit on the show, or maybe like privately, like Portland needs to decide what it wants to be. And I'm hopeful for that it goes to more pro transit, walking, biking. It either needs to go all in on that or be like, you know what, screw it, we're going to be a car city, and then go all in on that instead of this weird straddling and, you know, try to appease both sides, because you just, you can't.
Yeah.
And
like bike infrastructure, for instance, we patted ourselves on the back for decades because we put paint on asphalt, right? And that is not, that was good in the, whatever, 70s or 80s, right? But now, like, you're wondering, oh, how come we're not the bike capital anymore? Because, yeah, people who aren't like hardcore riders, that's not cool to ride next to crazy people with trucks with the grills 6 feet off the ground. Like, pedestrianism and bikes have gotten more dangerous because cars have gotten more dangerous.
Right.
And the bicycle infrastructure has not kept pace.
Nope.
And when we put a piece of paint on the ground and then we're like, hey, we don't see any bikers on there. You're like, no shit, dude, because all you did was just put paint next to a 9,000-pound truck that's going by at 40 miles. No one's going to ride.
Right, whose top of the hood is my forehead.
Yeah.
No one survives that impact.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying. It's been years since they did the major change to Northwest and Southwest Broadway, where there is a dedicated bike lane that it's separated from... Yeah. Traffic by parked cars. Yes, it's great. But that went in when I was working at PSU.
Yeah.
No.
A decade
way
ago.
Yeah, and that's like, and we haven't had, there's a weird funding thing about infrastructure as well. So federal government will generally kick in 30 to 50% for any infrastructure. They don't pay for any ongoing costs for anything. So there's this weird incentive in politics, but also just in government in general, to create new things and not, you know, who gives a shit what it actually is, because we're getting free money from the government, but nobody says, oh yeah, we still have to pay for half, 70%, 30%. Oftentimes the state kicks in. There's this big project being talked about right now about widening the freeway through the Rose Corridor, the I-5. They call it the I-5 Improvement Project, but it's really just more lanes.
Which never works.
No,
ever. You know,
science shows that you make more lanes and you don't decrease congestion.
No.
Nope. You just make more traffic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these freight companies are pissed about it because that Rose Corridor bottleneck is the bottleneck on I-5 between Washington and L.A. And, you know, my perspective is like, all right, we got ourselves a bottleneck. I drive through that thing most days, and I could take a bike. I choose to drive, and I know I'm gonna get stuck there. That's life, right? And the worst part is that, okay, did I just flip a wand and widen the freeway? Sure, well, I would do that. Well, whatever, just flip a wand, get people to shut up. It's gonna cost like $1.5 billion of our money, not federal money,
right?
The money that we could be spending on $1.5 billion, that's like a lot of money, man.
Yeah.
It's not like $10 million, which is like, you know, city level, you can kind of throw around $10 million without people getting too pissed. But $1 billion? That's like housing for everyone.
Yeah, like, to do something that's going to make the problem go away for maybe 5 years.
Exactly.
Before it fills right back up. And all of a sudden, now... You're like, well, maybe we should just tear down Memorial Coliseum to put in a wider freeway.
Yeah, or wherever the next bottleneck is, they're like, oh, now this one needs $1 billion.
Yeah.
Yeah. At what point do we stop?
Let's split a neighborhood in half again to put in another wider freeway.
No.
And they're done.
Yeah. Cool.
So like, you know, it's less this, there's so many cool things happening in the city right now. And like, if I don't get elected, it's probably fine, because it's an opportunity for the city of Portland to really try a different tactic, and there's so many cool candidates running.
Mm-hmm.
Some districts have more cool than others, and districts that haven't had all their candidates declared for sure. So it really is, people are optimistic too. I think if you talk to a regular old person, they're like, you know, yeah, things have been, it was worse like maybe last year, or we're thinking forward like, oh, Ted Wheeler is gone, gonna be gone. Yeah. So even if we get Rene Gonzalez in the mayoralship, I don't know. I mean, there's going to be more progressives, more people from east of 82nd, more women, more people of color than we've ever had on city council. So it can't be the status quo. It won't be the status quo.
Yeah, it's not going to work. I you know, Portland's on a slow recovery up, and I think if we stuck with this system we have now, it wouldn't get done. It doesn't help that the bulk of downtown is not going to generate tax revenue for like the next 3 years because of the massive breaks the council gave, like Nike and Apple. Whereas if you are a small business in downtown Portland, you've been struggling, but you've managed to stay open, you're paying everything. Meanwhile, we're kind of footing the bill for Nike to move into the mall.
Yeah. Downtown is a separate, man, that's a complicated situation because all those office towers ain't never coming back.
No.
So we got to be pretty bold about what are we going to do with those spaces.
Yeah, that the old business model just is not coming back. Yeah. Period. It's just not.
We've got some timely questions in the chat right now. Kevin is asking, will it be within your purview to implement rent control? And then relatedly, he mentioned that some cities are starting to ban Airbnbs or, you know, put more restrictions on that. So that's something that a lot of people like Kevin and myself and probably everyone else in this room would love to see happen. What what's your take?
Rent control is tough, very tough to do on a city level just because of the way it's easy to do on the state level, politically impossible anywhere. But you would do it on the state level rather than on the city level. So it's, you have to like change your charter to get it done on the city level. It's a real big challenge. I think what you can do on the city level is vouchers. So you just do a runaround.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not saying, you can't raise the rent this much or whatever. You can create, criteria that people can qualify for that can give them like food stamps, but for your rent,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And you don't put it at the poverty level, you put it at the 80% median or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it can graduate depending on what your income level is.
Right.
I think that's a great thing. That can also come out of supportive housing services dollars. So you may be aware we have this metro tax called the Supportive Housing Services Fund, SHS. And it's like, I'm gonna get the numbers wrong, but it's like 1% of the 1% income tax on people who make more than a lot, and it's a lot.
I remember this tax. We're not paying it, right?
Mm-hmm. If I get on council, my wife and I will barely pay a tiny amount of it, so that's cool. It also is like 1% on dollars above 250,
right.
Which mm-hmm. is like super smart because if you're making 300k, you're paying 1% on 50k mm-hmm. or whatever the number.
Yeah.
So it's really not a lot of money. But the fund right now has millions and millions, hundreds of millions of dollars in it, and it's projected to have even more. So, and they're having a hard time spending the money because they're trying to like build buildings with it, and that is a slow process. But you can create vouchers tomorrow, and you start handing out these vouchers. You can spin up a system relatively. So, that's my quick answer about rent control. No to rent control. Yes to rent control.
You could almost fill South Waterfront again.
Yeah, totally. Exactly.
Which is at like a third. Like there's. Yeah.
Yep.
And there is like a weird thing with some of these buildings that like the developer built the building with a certain spreadsheet. I spent this much for the land. I spent this much for the building. These are my ongoing costs. I cannot rent it for less. I will lose money. I'm going to lose money if it's vacant. I'm going to lose money if it's rented, unless I charge a certain amount. So, okay, that sucks. Sucks to be you. How can we figure out that? Or throw some vouchers in there so that you can get in there for a reasonable price and the developer can still be made whole. So that's the easy solution. What was the second question?
Oh.
Airbnbs.
Oh, fuck Airbnbs, man. That is the dumbest. I look forward to 10 years from now, 5 years, 1 year, where we look back and we're like, remember how we didn't used to have airbags in cars?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was crazy. Remember how we had Airbnbs everywhere?
I feel like it started out pretty wholesomely. It was more community centric, and it was like, can't afford a hotel while you're in town? You can couch surf. I have a spare room that's set up, but I live here. And like anything else in late stage capitalism, it got totally corrupted. And now it costs more money than a hotel. And you have to do all this extra work that you wouldn't have to do if you had stayed at a hotel. But more importantly is that it is taking away housing from people. And it's just going to rich people trying to make more passive income, and developers, investors.
Yeah, I've heard so many people like, well, what am I supposed to do? No one's renting my Airbnb houses. I'm going to lose money. I'm like,
sell it.
That was your choice. Right. Every investment
is a risk. Yep. Sorry, you claim to love capitalism. That's how it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is some conversation about trying to make it very challenging for a corporation to rent apartments or rent housing. But I don't like that because there are corporations that own apartment buildings, and that's messed up. And a lot of small landlords who maybe own a duplex, triplex, one apartment building, they own it through an LLC. No humans own rental property. That's just not how the system is structured. So that's kind of a non-starter for me. I think we just have to be more diligent about licensing Airbnb. The real problem with the Airbnb situation right now is that there are a lot of unlicensed Airbnb, or they're not properly collecting. Like, the city of Portland created like a portal that you like go and register your Airbnb and pay your taxes. And that, like, that thing like didn't work for like months, and they had no idea how many Airbnbs there were, and they were not collecting any revenues. And I've been getting emails from future constituents who were saying, oh, there's an Airbnb down the street. What are you going to do about that? And I'm like, I'll get to that. But you're right. It shouldn't exist. So I think the first thing you do is just enforce the existing statutes that we have about registering, paying your taxes like that. And then we look at increasing the taxes to be fair and reasonable. And if you have Airbnbs and you can charge enough for them, okay, I'm enough of a capitalist to let that slide. But when we're dealing with the massive housing shortage right now, we got to look around and be like, wait, look at all these houses. There's like, I think somebody told me 8,000 rooms on Airbnb in the city of Portland.
Yeah.
And that's a lot.
And that's a whole other problem with like corporations buying single residence homes. I think it's Zillow that owns like 20% of the homes you see for sale on Zillow. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So I don't like Airbnbs. But I'm also kind of, you know, I'm a capitalist at the end of the day. So I think there's got to be ways to make people make money, but not at the expense of our housing crisis. We don't have enough housing for the people that we have, and we're paying too much for it.
Yeah. And it's cheaper to house people than to build endless shelters. And it just is. Like, in the long run, it is just cheaper.
The worst way to house someone is to put them in jail. The most expensive way, it's like 40 times more expensive to put someone in jail than is to put them in the most expensive pod home, which those things are total ripoff. So fine, we need to build them because some people are ready for that stage of housing and not another stage of housing. But the concept of throwing people in jail because they're homeless, I mean, if you just, you can ignore the humanity of it and just focus on the dollars, it is unbelievably stupid to put people in jail for kind of almost any reason, like just from a dollars perspective.
Yeah, that's a whole nother conversation.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I love like ignoring humanity for the sake of dollars in a progressive way. Because, God, it just makes people shut up about, you know.
That's kind of the only way you can get Americans to pay attention. I've long ago feel like we've kind of given up on like, I can't convince you it's just the humane thing to do. So I'm going to show you the raw numbers.
Totally.
And show you that it's cheaper.
Yep. Yep. If you want to ignore the humanity of it, fine. Let me tell you another reason, a bunch of other reasons why it's terrible. Because they always also complain about taxes.
Yes. So hopefully in District 2, you will help change that.
Yeah. Okay. One important thing is that, so we talked about ranked choice voting, we talked about multi-member districts, geographic representation. There's a pretty wild thing happening in the state of Portland right now called the Small Donor Elections Program. And this program has existed in some form or fashion for previous elections as well, but every time we run election through it, it gets modified. And this is the most awesome version yet. It is a matching program. So you have to swear to take no money from companies, $0 from businesses, which is harder for someone like me and easier for other people who don't know a bunch of businesses, but zero from businesses, a maximum of $350 from individuals. And there's a bunch of other rules too that aren't really that interesting. But if you promise to do that, the first $20 that you get, up to $20, $5 to $20 from a donor is matched by the city 9-to-1. So if Aaron gives me $20, the city of Portland gives me $180. Mm-hmm. So $200 is what I net out of Aaron information. You give me $5, the city of Portland gives me $45. So I get $50 total. The coolest part about it is that you can give $5 to me, you can give $5 to anybody you want, and the city will match all of those $5. And $50 is like actually a good donation. Like it, my average donation right now is like $60. So getting a $5 donation from someone, sometimes like in the past, I've been like, oh, I'm gonna give $5 to Obama and make me feel good. Like, that doesn't make me feel good. I gave $5 to the guy, right? What does that mean? And he's like, every dollar counts. Can I have $3? And you're like, you don't really want $3. You want $3,000.
Right.
But it really actually, they create a system. I don't know who did. I got to pat them on the back when I find them. They create a system that actually incentivizes many, 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 many small donors. So the recommendation is to find people you like, give them $5. And that really, you also have to hit a certain threshold of donors in order to qualify for the program. So you have to hit 250 donors, people, before you can start getting any matching funds.
Which makes sense. So, that stops someone from trying to find a way to just scam some money.
Mm-hmm. Yep, yep. You know. And it really encourages broad appeal, which also reflects the kind of race that you're going to run. You're not going to run a real niche campaign. You're going to run things where you can get $5 from a lot of people. And there's different tiers. There's like a 250 tier, a 750 tier, and a 1,250 tier to have unlock different matching. So it's a really cool program, and every city councilor, I think even Dan Ryan, is in the SP. The dollar, if you do like the spreadsheet on the small donor elections program, it works to participate in it, even though you're...
Yeah. And if folks are really curious about where the money's going, it's all public domain. It's all public. You just go to the Secretary of State's website. You have to do some digging because it's a Byzantium website, but...
Yeah, you can go to Secretary of State. You can get people's names if you want. But the City of Portland Small Donor Elections website also has a map. And so you can like click NatWest District 2 and you can see a little dots of everybody who's given me money. And you can click in and you can see like how many $5 donations I got, how many $100 donations I got. So you can actually, it's funny enough, like I'm the number one by donors, but I'm the sixth by dollars, but I have the most, $5 to $20, I think is the first bracket. I have the most $5 to $20 donation. So
well, you're getting all of our you're just getting our old cider money.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a couple pints, you know.
It's nice. Yeah. How many? I thought about running a promo. Give me $1 for every Reverend Nat's drink you ever had.
That's not fair because for a long time you wouldn't let us pay for anything. Yeah, you were just giving us booze.
And that was, and now it's going to pay dividends.
It's, yes.
He's not in my district. I can't vote for him.
Okay. You can still give him money.
I have.
Oh, yeah. That's a good question. You don't, someone doesn't have to be your potential constituent in order to make a donation to your campaign.
That's right. Yep. So you can donate across districts. You know, I've donated $5 to most of the city councilor candidates right now already, and that money will be matched. You can also accept, I could accept money from anywhere in the United States. So like my parents live in Virginia and they sent me money and it's totally fine. Their money won't get matched by the city. The city will only match Portland dollars, Portland donation dollars.
But from any district.
Any district.
I did see a few days after you announced it, I think one of your fans in Tokyo was like, I want to send you money. And you're like, no, 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 no. You're a foreign investor. Yeah. Your heart's in the right place, but please do not send me $5.
Yeah, my Japanese friends are going to be here in July, and they're like, "Who want to buy Revnat's T-shirt?" And I'm like, "A Revnat T-shirt." And I'm like, "No, I wish lost in translation, but no."
Can you give it to them like on their way home? Like, here.
We're recording, so no, I can't do that.
Well, I didn't know. Well, there's no money. I didn't know how that would work.
I don't actually know. There's we have a lawyer, a guy who's been like doing this kind of stuff for a long time on the state level.
And right now he's listening to the show and he's like, please tell Nat to shut up.
He helps me through these things.
Speaking of maybe telling Nat to shut up, we've got another question. I came at this weird, but just go with me for a second. We have another question in the chat that you may or may not be allowed to talk about. I don't know, but I would like to know the answer to this because I think it's a topic that's...
Oh, it's going
to
come up again.
I would say not near and dear to your heart, but that you are quite familiar with. And I'll just read it as it is written. This November seems like the sort of political climate that results in civil unrest. Are you looking at ways to reduce the harm/friction between the public and the police? 4 years back, the federal government sent an occupying force to the city. Are we looking at options in case that happens again?
Yeah. That's
got heavy.
A nicely sobering question. Legitimate question and not a hypothetical. I mean, it's hypothetical, right?
Yeah.
But it's something that we should be thinking about. I know there aren't any candidates who are like discussing plans. There's not really a lot of opportunity for a legislative body to work on any sort of emergency situation if something bad happens. I think like there's every likelihood that if things go wrong in November, that Portland will be a target for right-wing folks. I have some hope that somebody told me the other day that the Portland's reputation as a sanctuary city might have a different definition, come 2025. And I think it certainly is our responsibility to, as elected officials who don't control the police department yet, to say that Portland is a sanctuary city. And that's, it's just a proclamation, right? But if you're a trans kid in Idaho, that's like not that weird to be like, okay, Portland's right over there, and that's where I'm going to go. I think there's a lot of people who, are trans or whatever, who are thinking to themselves, who are making plans, mm-hmm. hoping that they don't have to execute any of those plans or coming up with contingencies. And I think it's really important for us to very firmly and loudly and again and again and again say, this isn't a safe space for people. How we go through and create, how we ensure that safety, remains to be seen. But I think that I'm encouraged that we can remain a nice place to live, because when George Floyd was murdered and Trump sent his goons in July of 2020, regular Portlanders were like, no, hell no, it's not going to happen. A lot of people were like, okay, City of Portland cops, I don't really want to fight that. But when it came to like actual fascism, we showed up. There were nights when there were thousands, many thousands. There were nights when there were probably a little over 10,000 people downtown protesting. And I think that we may be faced with that in the future. And I think it's a legitimate question. And
Part of my day job is acknowledging that one way or another, the city's doing really well. It's actually growing. It's getting better, regardless of what the New York Times likes to write, or anything from Pamplin Media. But 2024 is going to be weird for Portland, because we're going to be an example, right or wrong, or a punching bag, right or wrong, by both major parties. they're both going to highlight us for something. Mm-hmm. And they're both going to twist it. And it's just kind of something that as a city, we kind of have to go on the offensive about. Portland's been playing defense for way too long, I feel like, in this city, of being like, well, but we're trying this. Like, we kind of need to start pushing back and writing our own narrative instead of letting other places with a vested interest write our narrative for us.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's, there's really interesting dichotomy that really kind of sums that up. There was a friend of mine owns a restaurant in downtown, and across the street is a person who owns, person who owns another business. And this other business person is very carceral. She thinks that the homeless people basically should just get thrown in jail. And they're neighbors, and they're dealing with the exact same stuff right across the street. And he has come out again constantly as a promoter of Portland. His solution to the problems that he sees is to elevate the positive. Mm-hmm. Her solutions are to elevate the negative so that you can, that's her version of cleaning it up. And so I think that's really our choice as concerned citizens we all acknowledge there's a problem. The question is what rules, what techniques, what attitude are we going to bring into solving it? And we can criminalize people, and we can waste money, and we can waste resources, and we can kick the can down the road, or we can really try to create a place where people want to be there and want to participate in Portland in ways that they maybe have taken a break from participating in the city in the past.
Cool. Well, I think that's a good spot for you to, we can let you go. I know you got an early start.
Yeah, I'm driving the bus early, which I like driving early.
Do you know which route you get, or you don't know until you get to that day?
I know which route I get, but every week it changes. So this, I'm out in Beaverton, going from downtown Portland to Beaverton Transit Center on Route 80. Route 50, 80 was last week. Route 58, I think it is, Canyon Road.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll see you on the 2015 or 12. Those are the ones I'll probably see you on.
I do the 12 a decent amount.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
I don't do the 20.
I don't ride it very often, but I'll ride the 12 back sometimes, going back to the east side, but not so much going to the west side because of where it turns.
15 in a couple of weeks. So
that's a fun route.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really scary on Mount Tabor. There's that one turn.
Oh, yes. The Yamhill Belmont turn.
Yeah. And for some reason, the TriMet schedulers have it so that this bus on time meets this bus on time at that corner.
And they allow parking on the corner.
Yeah.
Right on the corner.
Yeah. I've done that turn once or twice in a bus with another bus right there. And it's like, okay. And it'll take 10 minutes to get through this turn.
Yeah. Well, man, Nat, thanks for popping on. It's always fun.
Well, for having me. I got to continue to dominate the number of visits.
You're up on Rucka by a couple now. We should reach out to him, though.
Yeah.
Also, we should consider getting like a specialty garment like they do on SNL.
Oh, like the five-time host thing?
The five-time, the smoking jacket. Yeah. But we're not that classy, so it won't be a smoking jacket.
It should be an apron.
Like a dirty one with like barbecue stains all over.
Pre-greased.
I wasn't gonna go there, but I do think an apron somehow.
And we just add a tassel for like every fifth appearance.
Sure, something like that. We'll workshop it. Yeah. We'll get back to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah,
it's so fun to kick off my cider career with you guys, and it's fun to kick off my non-cider career. With
you. Well, thank you, Nat.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we'll talk to you soon.
Okay, hasta la vista.
Bye.
Bye.
Woo!
I'm really excited for him.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, again, I can't vote for him, but I'm excited to watch his campaign.
I mean, I guess I'm excited for myself too, because it will affect me directly if he wins.
Right, because we're all Cable. You're District 1.
I don't know what district downtown is.
It all depends where in downtown. I am 3.
I am Old Town Chinatown.
Kevin. We just missed sharing this with Nat. Kevin says, when you are in office, please look to places that have implemented successful policies relating to housing crises and try to help out our houseless neighbors. And I think I can say with a certainty that that is something that Nat has and will continue to do.
Yeah.
Like I said in the intro, he is both an ally and an activist. That's like one of the things he's well known for, and which is why I'm excited, because he's a really good person, which is a great basis for, you know, selecting your leadership, your local leaders.
Mm-hmm. And the fact that he just acknowledges that there's a bunch of stuff he doesn't know, so he'll find people who do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like already having a lawyer to advise him on, like, the things he should and shouldn't say or do.
Here's the thing, is I don't expect political leaders to have all of the answers and be experts in those fields. That is not their job. Their job is to find the people who are, listen to them, and then when they say, this is how we should do things, implement that. That is their job.
Mm-hmm.
Their job is to bring those people together and implement the good ideas and know when one good idea outweighs another, and definitely which ones are the bad ideas.
Yes.
Yes, for sure.
I mean, that's true all the way up to the presidency.
Yes.
No one person can be an expert in all of the things that a president makes decisions on. It's literally about all of the people that are around you every day.
According to this district map, I am District 4.
That sounds right. I think most of the West Side is District 4, right?
All of downtown. Okay. All of the West Side is District 4. Northeast and North Portland are District 2. Inner Southeast is District 3. Mm. And Outer Southeast, North and Northeast is District 1.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. So and District 3 has a weird scooch into South Waterfront.
Yep.
Yeah.
You're District 3.
I'm 3.
Mm-hmm. I'm District 4. You're District 2.
Mm-hmm.
I actually sat in on some of those planning meetings.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of fascinating how equitable they worked really hard to make these districts so that it's a pretty much even playing field economically, socially, racially. They worked pretty hard at it.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Pardon my yawning.
No matter how many certain groups tried to influence it so the West Side maintained most of its financial power.
Cool. I may or may not have just sent a request for another candidate to appear on the show. Spoilers, I did. I did send it.
There's a couple I want to reach out to in District 3. Well, I mentioned both of them on the show already.
Yeah.
Those are the two I want to reach out to.
Robin Yee is one of them. And Merrick sent me his
webpage.
Instagram account.
Oh, yeah.
So I was looking at that.
That's how I, yep.
Yep. I don't know who's running for District 4. I should find out.
Yes.
I'm sure it's all people from the West Side, and I don't trust them.
I think one of the... I think it might be Dan Ryan might be running. Because Mingus is going for mayor, Gonzalez is going for mayor, Rubio is going for mayor. These are the council people, not all of our mayoral candidates. I think Dan Ryan's going for a council seat, not mayoralship. So... I think that is correct.
I don't know. I haven't really spent much time on research, by which I mean almost any.
There was rumor for a while that Blumenhauer might, because I think he's only going to do one more term in Congress and he wants to be done.
Hmm.
And from what I read, he has no desire to run for Senate either. He just wants to get out of national politics. But he's kind of hinted at coming back to Portland, so who knows.
District 4 candidates... Eli Arnold, Olivia Clark, Mike Dianopoli, Mitch Green, Chad Likens.
Chad.
That's that guy.
Oh.
Tony Morse.
That guy?
No, that other guy. Moses Ross.
I don't understand. Wait.
Sarah Silky.
That's a mermaid name.
Jeremy Bissell Smith.
I think Silky with an I.
John Torin, Michael Trimble, Soren Underhall, Bob Weinstein, and that was the last one. You received someone reaching out to us going,
oh, yeah.
Hey, I know I look like this.
Right.
And I'm doing this, but I would like to come on your show
he
and
talk about... He wants to talk about chess.
Yes.
About how there's more women in chess than ever right. before.
That's Chad Likens.
Okay. Yeah, he was like, I'd love to talk about it. He's like, but Nat said you do like kind of a geeky gaming podcast. Can I come on and talk about chess? Maybe, yeah, maybe.
Different kind of geeky and gaming, but...
Is it?
He talked about how there's more women and young women getting into chess than ever before. Like, the number is massive.
Right. If we are focusing...
That's not on... what I'm saying.
No, I know. I'm sorry. Yeah.
So, yes, there's that. The first person that I said on this list, Eli Arnold, is a... Are you fucking kidding me? No. Arnold is a police officer with the Portland Police Bureau and lives in Selwood. He doesn't even live in the district that he's running for.
How do you get away with doing that?
I started off with saying he's a police officer.
Also that.
Yep. Nope.
Yeah, not that guy.
Absolutely not. Everyone else, I'm just kind of... I will have to do my homework on.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Sorry. It's a weird... I got a weird collection of people running for District 4.
That's yeah. Great.
I'll look that up more later.
Yeah.
But yes, I did send a...
oh, cool.
A request to a different campaign. I don't want to say who it is yet.
Yeah, we'll say we're all off mic and stuff like that.
Yeah. And, it's not that I'm trying to be coy. It's just I don't want to commit someone to something that they're actually may or may not want to do. Like, because that's a shitty thing to do.
They'll be on next week.
Yeah. I would love it, though, if this candidate said yes. So.
Right.
That would be great.
Nice. Sounds good. Bean, you got anything?
I do not.
Should we wrap up the show?
Yes.
All right. Yes, Kevin, you're right. 80% of Portland's police do not live in Portland. But that's another whole other thing. We don't really have anything planned for next week, so we'll figure something out. There'll be a show.
I will come back with Tales from the Coast.
Oh, yes.
I'm leaving town tomorrow.
That's so right. Well, you enjoy your time then.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm going to work on horrifying things to do to your characters next week.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't think of a better seaside town activity.
That's true.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Well, with that, I'm Aron Duran.
I'm Bea Narita.
And I am Cable Hashitani.
And we will speak to everybody next week. Bye-bye.